Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 20th, 2006. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week, Chris Colby, editor of Brew Your Own magazine, gives us tips on how to get from grain to glass in 1 week, brewing a beer from start to finish in just 7 days. But coming up on May 6th, you'll have an opportunity to celebrate National Homebrew Day. The American Homebrewers Association is suggesting that homebrewers from around the world join together to hold a big brew and brew with friends and family. The AHA is also suggesting two recipes to use in celebrating National Homebrew Day. One is one that you'll find familiar, Poor Richard's Ale, which was created to celebrate the 300th anniversary of Ben Franklin's birth. They're also suggesting a Summer Kolsch recipe, which won a gold medal in the light hybrid beer category at last year's AHA National Homebrew Competition. You can find those recipes and more details about National Homebrew Day coming up on May 6th at beertown.org. That's beertown.org, the website of the Brewers Association and the American Homebrewers Association. Well, Tangent from Adelaide, Australia, writes in with a very needed reminder for me. Tangent writes, "Love the podcasts." Well, thanks, Tangent. "Now I have to go for long drives with my iPod just to get enough time to listen to the show." So, you know, I'm helping to contribute to global warming, apparently, down there in Australia. All grain brewing, Tangent says, is gaining great momentum in Australia, with Sydney and Adelaide hotbeds of fanatical brewers. One big request from your show. Please include a few metric quotes. Imperial measurements are fine for people over 50 years old in this country, but it's like you're talking another language for the rest of us. Just when the interview comes to a crucial point, your guest says, "And the greatest improvement I've made in my mash is to use blah blah amount of water in a blah blah sized brew at blah blah temperature." Tangent says, "Please don't forget that you're an international medium broadcasting to the world. Other than that, love the show. Keep it up and yell out if you're ever in Australia and need a beer. A lot of brewers from AussieHomebrewer.com listen to your show, and I'm sure they'd be stoked if you give them a hello." So, hello to everybody at AussieHomebrewer.com. And please accept my apologies for being so inconsiderate. You know, Tangent is exactly right. When I asked for feedback on the pre-release of the All Grain DVD, feedback from Europe and Australia was good, but they said, please include metric measurements. And I did. On the production release of the DVD, I did put metric equivalents on the screen so that people would not be confused and would help out to clarify things. But apparently I still need to be reminded on the podcast. I do have a good excuse, though. I'm an idiot. I'm also over 40, so that's also a contributing factor. You know, they tried to teach us the metric system over here in the United States in the 70s, you know, including like on educational TV shows. They had like Metric Man, who was this guy dressed up as a meter stick. But for some reason, I don't know why, it just didn't stick. We Americans tend to forget that we are pretty much an island in a metric sea of the world. And I promise I'll try harder to remember to include metric equivalents when we're talking specifics. You know, it's interesting that using metric measurements can be less confusing in brewing. For instance, when we say that the temperature for a protein rest when you're mashing is around 122 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, I was always curious as to why that specific temperature is always mentioned, 122 degrees. Then I converted the temperature for the video, and it's 50 degrees Celsius. So that makes much more sense. The sacrification range in mashing is 140 to 158 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, why wouldn't you say 160? Well, the reason you don't is that it is 60 to 70 degrees Celsius. So, much easier to remember on the metric side. 50 degrees Celsius for a protein rest, and then the sacrification rest, where you turn starches into sugars, is 60 to 70 degrees. Much easier to remember. Now, it may be more tricky for me to figure out weights and measures But I'm, you know, I'll get used to it. I've got to do it. Got too many people listening from other places, and I appreciate that. I appreciate everybody listening wherever you are. David writes in from Romsey, Hampshire, in the United Kingdom, with another concern. Well, first off, David starts suggesting that we do a show on hops, the aroma, flavor, and bittering characteristics of different varieties, and the most effective hop schedules. And I'm working on setting up that show now. But David says, I have no objection to your gentle plugging of your DVD, but please note that unless your not North American listener has a multi-region DVD player, he or she cannot watch one of your DVDs. Well, you're right and you're wrong, David. You're right in that our first DVD, Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, is encoded for Region 1, that's Canada and the United States. Why? Like I said earlier, I'm an idiot. I just simply was not thinking in a global perspective. The good news is that I do have the capacity to learn, even though I'm an idiot, and our stepping into all-grain DVD has no region encoding, so if your DVD player can handle NTSC, then it will work on your machine. So thanks, David, for describing my plugging of our DVDs as gentle. Try not to be too in-your-face about that kind of stuff. You know, our merchandise, that's, you know, what pays the phone bills and such. So I appreciate everybody who has gone to the shop at basicbrewing.com and helped us out. And speaking of gentle plugging, I've noticed that the T-shirts on our shop at basicbrewing.com are starting to be more popular. I guess the warmer weather here in the Northern Hemisphere is inspiring brewers to get some stylish new shirts to wear while they're brewing outside. Okay, enough of that. In this month's issue of Brew Your Own magazine, I was very interested in an article called Speed Brews. I asked Chris Colby, editor of Brew Your Own, to come on the show to talk about the techniques in the article that promised to get you from grain to glass in 1 week. Well, Chris Colby, welcome again to Basic Brewing Radio.
James, thanks for having me.
The premise of the conversation today and the premise of the article in the recent edition of BYO magazine is that you've promised to bring some beer to a party, and the party is a week away, and you don't have any homebrew. So what do you do? How do you get from grain to glass, or I guess extract to glass, in a week, in a short period of time? And I guess we should start off by saying that this isn't the recommended procedure in brewing to get good beer, right?
Well, actually, a lot of what is in this article, which is, this is an article by Steve Piatz. He's a Minnesota home brewer. Last year he wrote a story about Brettanomyces, and I think the year before that he wrote a story about lambic. Anyway, actually a lot of the information in the article does tell people sort of what you should be doing most of the time, or all the time when you brew. I mean, one thing about home brewing is, you know, a lot of people do a lot of different procedures. They have a lot of different techniques to make their beer, and not all of them are optimal. And also, as home brewers, we have the luxury sort of sitting around waiting for our beer to mature. You know, if you don't pitch quite enough yeast, you can just let the fermentation go a little bit longer. If it's, you know, if your fermentation is a little cooler than normal, you know, just let it go. And what this article does is just basically collects everything you'd need to know to brew a batch of beer in a short amount of time. We use that as a setup for the article. It's, you know, what if you had a party next weekend and you didn't have any beer? And so a lot of what's in the article is just standard brewing knowledge or whatever, but it's, you know, just collected here for people who, it's a question that comes up quite frequently on the online forums. You know, it's like, oh my God, I got to brew beer quick. What do I do? What kind of, you know, what style of beer do I brew? What do I need to do this? And this article, at least hopefully, answers those questions.
And not every style, obviously, lends itself to this short brewing time frame. For instance, you wouldn't want to try to brew a barley wine, or you wouldn't want to try to brew a good lager in a week.
No, you just couldn't. There are several you know, several styles that are unattainable in a short amount of time. Any high gravity beer, any lager, any sour beer, all those take a certain amount of time to brew and to condition, and you just can't brew those. So what you're left with is the sort of the small ales and moderate strength ales. And, really good choices here for a beer when you need to turn around quickly would be sort of a British session beer, like a mild ale or a bitter, or, a smallish brown ale, something like that.
Would a beer that tends to be more fruity be a better beer style for a short fermentation time?
With a short fermentation time, you're probably going to be, to get it to go as quick as possible, you're probably going to want to run the fermentation, you'll be within the recommended fermentation temperature range, but you want it to be on the high end, because the slower that or the lower temperature you ferment things at, the slower it's going to be, the slower the fermentation is going to proceed. So, and, as a consequence, the higher you raise the temperature, the more fruity esters you get. So, you probably, if you're making a beer quickly, you probably will have some, although not an excessive amount. I mean, some other factors that go into ester production are gravity of the beer. Higher gravity beers tend to kick out more esters, and here you're starting with a low one, so you've got a lot, going for you there. And if you pitch enough yeast and aerate enough, and your yeast strain is also going to show a big, there are British ale strains that kick out very few esters, and if you use one of those, you can get away with a low to moderate estery beer. But yeah, in general, if you're going to speed up the fermentation to at least beyond what most homebrewers do, you would expect a few esters.
Now, you mentioned pitching enough yeast. Since our concept is that we forgot and we're trying to crunch time, making a starter is probably not within the realm of the concept, right?
Yeah. In the article, Steve gives the procedure for making a starter, but then, he mentions that, if you're crunched for time, maybe that's not an option. So one thing you can do on a low to moderate gravity ale, if you need to boost your pitching rate and you don't have time to make a starter, is either, if you're going to go with liquid yeast, just get two packages of liquid yeast. These days, a package is supposed to contain around 100 billion cells if you get it fresh. So if you have two of them and pitch that to a low gravity ale, you'll be doing fine. Likewise, if you go with dried yeast, just get a couple, or even maybe three packages, because it's cheap, dried yeast, and go with that. And just, make sure to get your cell numbers up in the beginning if you're pitching. Especially when you're trying to, as in this article, brew quickly, you absolutely need to get your wort pitched and have, an adequate amount of cells in it so that fermentation starts right away.
And if you're lucky enough to have another beer in the primary about ready for bottling, you could do what I did this week with my Amarillo ale and bottle one batch and then brew another batch in the same day and rack that on top of the yeast from the first batch. And boy, that takes off like gangbusters.
Yeah, if you want, exactly. If you want a really quick start and you have something that you're just finishing up, yeah, use the yeast from the previous batch. Sure, that works very, very well. Assuming that your cleaning and sanitation was adequate on the first batch.
Right.
Yeah, but that works. That's a good thing to do, and a lot of people do that these days.
And then aeration. We've talked about aeration in the past, but let's go over the fundamentals of good aeration again.
Well, aeration is key for the yeast, for the health of the yeast. When you first pitch them, they've been stored in their little vial or smack pack or vacuum sealed pouch, and they need to recover and get to the point health-wise, that they can ferment the wort well. And what oxygen does for them is they take it into their cells and they convert it into a compound called a sterol, which they then use to build a healthy yeast cell wall, which then means they can divide. So basically, you need to give your yeast some oxygen at the beginning of fermentation, and if you drop below a certain level of oxygen, your fermentation either isn't going to start or it's going to go, you know, very slowly and sort of putter out early. But if you get an adequate amount of oxygen, you know, the fermentation will start, you know, in a healthy amount of time, and it'll go. And certainly in a low to moderate gravity ale, you don't need a ton of aeration, you know, because the yeast aren't going to get that stressed. But you know, you need some aeration. We recommend giving it about a 45 second to 1 minute shot of oxygen, or you know, 5 minutes or more of air from an aquarium pump. And even realistically, if you're going with an aquarium pump, you can go up to about an hour if you want. But you get most of the oxygen dissolved in the first, you know, little bit of time.
And if you go for an hour with an aquarium pump, you're going to have to deal with a huge head in your fermenter.
Yeah, you've got a lot of foam. And actually, some of that foam is probably coming out of your overall foaming potential. But on the other hand, aeration is important, and, you know, it's a trade-off.
And, you know, then there's my favorite method, which is to, you know, shake the heck out of the fermenter for a few, you know, as long as you can stand it. you get a bit of exercise at the same time, and, you know, hopefully you get enough air into the, or oxygen into the beer to get you started. But again, if you pitch enough yeast, that lessens the importance of aeration.
Yeah, I mean, you still need it, but definitely if you've got a healthy number of cells in there, you're not going to have to, you know, aeration becomes less and less critical as long as you're doing something. And doubly so on a smaller gravity beer. Also, another thing, and I'm not even sure if you mentioned it in the article or not, but you can also lessen the need for aeration just in any beer if you give your yeast starter a lot of oxygen. You know, if you give them a good shot or two as the yeast are growing in there, you can go pretty lightly on the aeration when you actually pitch the yeast to the main batch.
And you would think that it would be easier to aerate, you know, a very small batch like a starter rather than, you know, the full batch.
Yeah, it's fairly easy to aerate a starter.
So you mentioned the fermentation temperature. You probably want to get to the upper end of the optimal range for your yeast. And is there anything else to say on that realm?
Not really. I mean, in this article, you know, we stress getting beer brewed quickly, but we also stress, you know, Steve, the author, also, you know, mentions you want it to turn out to be good, drinkable beer.
Yeah.
You know, and with respect to temperature, you can keep raising the temperature and your fermentation is going to go faster and faster. But, you know, with an English ale yeast, once you reach sort of the top end of the range and you start going over it, you know, the fermentation is going to speed up, but, you know, the resulting beer is just going to be undrinkable. It's either going to have, you know, just so many fruity esters that, you know, you can't even want to get near it, or it'll have, you know, there'll be nail polishy, solvent-y, you know, fusel oil, you know, type flavors and aromas, and, you know, you get over a certain temperature and you're brewing, you know, headache beer because, you know, you get enough fusels in there and it's just, you know, it just bad for you.
It doesn't count if you show up for the party with beer that sucks.
Yeah, exactly. You want to show up with a beer that's, you know, representative of your skills, not something that you've, you know, thrown together and sure it's fermented out, but it, you know, is best as, you know, a drain cleaner.
So what do you sacrifice? I mean, you know, typically I'll spend a couple weeks in the fermenter, either, you know, racking to a primary or a secondary or not, just to condition the beer before it goes into the bottle. So what do you sacrifice with a short fermentation time if you don't give the yeast time to play around in the beer?
Well, the thing about this article is we really wanted to put together an idea for brewing good beer quickly. So if you follow everything in this article, you really shouldn't be sacrificing anything. And I mean, the real key here is that we recommend low gravity beers. You know, if you are brewing a moderate gravity beer, like even like an APA, you know, American Pale Ale at, you know, say your starting gravity was 1.052. You know, if you tried to rush that into a week, you would run into problems. You'd have, you know, there'd be still green flavors in the beer, and, you know, depending on what yeast you use, it might not even be clear yet, you know, and, you would run into some problems. But if you start, you know, with like a British session beer, you know, those can start as low as, you know, about 1.030. And I think most of the ones we recommend, I think the recipes started about, one of them's 36, and the one I contributed was 40. So, yeah, it's 1.040. So, I mean, we're talking about, these are low-gravity session beers, so you really shouldn't have to sacrifice quality. Like I say, if you move up and if you're trying to brew sort of your ordinary beers at higher gravities, you know, certainly if you're over 50, I don't think you could successfully brew a beer in a week. At least it would be it'd be much more difficult.
Now, going from a grain or brewing to beer in a week, probably using bottles and doing a bottle condition, trying to get carbonation, you know, between, you know, the short time in the fermenter and then a short time in the bottle, probably not as practical as using a keg.
Right. For people who bottle, you're going to have to add the bottle conditioning time onto this. In our article, the beers we give, like, you know, brewed in about a week, specify that you force carbonate the beer. You know, you brew it, and fermentation maybe only takes 2 to 3 days with these low-gravity ales. You know, maybe rack it to secondary if you want to clear, you know, let that go for a day. And then, you know, put it in a keg and let it condition for a couple days under CO2 pressure, and it should be ready to go. I mean, interestingly enough, that's a lot of brew pubs do this. You know, a lot of brew pub beer you get. There was, in the beginning days of the brew pub sort of revolution, there was a yeast strain called the, I forget what the number was to it, but it was called the 7-Day Miracle. And if I remember right, it's the Ringwood ale strain that Y Yeast offers. I'm not positive that's the case, but if I seem to remember that. And anyway, you know, the idea was that you could brew beer in 7 days and then be serving it to customers. And, you know, a lot of brew pubs do that. They, you know, for if they brew, you know, higher gravity stuff, they're obviously conditioning it a little bit more, but they're everyday sort of, you know, just plain old pale ales, porters, you know, stouts or stuff. They, you know, their turnaround time is on the, at least, it's not, you know, a week exactly, but it's on that order, you know, because they've got their fermentation and conditioning tanks, and they don't have, you know, they don't have an infinite amount of space to just let, you know, beers sit for months and, you know, condition. And so they've got they've also got, obviously, the tools to control their, you know, the fermentation temperature, the aeration and stuff to the point where they can do this. But yeah, it's not uncommon to brew that quickly.
And they may also have the advantage of a good filtration system as well.
Yeah, if you can, yeah, and a good cooling system. I mean, if you really want to rush things, you know, once fermentation is over, if you can get, you know, say rack your beer to a corny keg or something and, you know, throw it in a refrigerator and cool it down to crash out the yeast, you know, and then subsequently filter it, yeah, you can shave a couple days off the whole, you know, the whole time, because you don't need to, you know, you don't need to wait for the yeast to sediment out at room temperature, and, you know, you can filter it, and, you know, if you really have a fancy setup, you know, you could have the beer running out of the filter, and you could have a carbonation stone, you know, built into the outflow line going into your next keg. And, you know, you could filter and carbonate in one step.
Now, you mentioned filtration, but if you have a beer style that's cloudy, like a wheat beer, for instance, you don't have to worry about that. So You know, getting a fruity, cloudy wheat beer is what you're probably after.
Yeah, I mean, most home brewers don't have a setup to filter. You know, most home brewers, you know, if their beer is brewing, you know, is they're serving it clear, it's because they've kept it cold long enough for everything to sediment out. I mean, that's what I do. I don't even have a filtration setup. So, you know, when you're trying to brew a quick turnaround beer, obviously clarity is going to be one of the hardest things to achieve. And, you know, basically what you want to do, you know, everything you can to achieve that, but you also want to hedge your bets by, you know, it's good to hedge your bets by picking a strain that or a style that's not going to matter so much. German wheat beers are great that way because you don't have to worry, you know, at all about clarity, pretty much. You know, if you just pitch enough and have it ferment nice, it's going to be cloudy, and it's supposed to be cloudy, so, you know, good. But even with the British ales, like the milds and bitters, those don't necessarily have to be crystal clear. I mean, for one thing, British beers are usually served at cellar temperature, and that would be above the temperature the chill haze forms at.
Good point.
You're serving it at the right temperature, it's not going to be hazy anyway. You know, and if it is, it's because, you know, most home brewers, even though we you know, brew a lot of British styles, you know, we don't have a special fridge, most of us. I certainly don't. You know, that's raised to 55 for, you know, cellar temperature served beers. You know, we just throw them in the fridge and they come out at 40 degrees and, you know.
You just wait.
Yeah, either just wait, or I mean, I just start drinking it, and I figure it'll be up to cellar temperature by the end of the beer.
That last sip is perfect.
Yeah, exactly, and then you can go back and try again.
So, have you ever actually made a beer in a week?
Yeah, actually, I did, and I contributed the recipe to this article. In the on page 44 or whatever, I gave the recipe for a beer. It's called the Bonneville Flats Bitter. It's the Bonneville Flats, if you remember, that's when you used to page through the Guinness Book of World Records. That's where all the land speed records were held.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's the Salt Flats or whatever. So, I don't know. I thought Bonneville Flats Bitter was kind of a cool name. And anyway, this is a beer that I emailed my homebrew club like the week before our meeting. And I told them, our meeting was on Saturday, and this was a Sunday. I said, I'm brewing a beer right now, and I'm going to bring it to the meeting, and it's going to be finished. And a lot of people emailed me back, you know, oh, that'll be interesting. So I brewed this beer, sort of a low-gravity British beer, just a bitter. It's got a nice amount of hops in it, probably a little more than an English beer really would, but not overpoweringly so. Brewed with, I used two packages of Nottingham yeast, so I didn't have to, this is a dried yeast, didn't have to make a starter. And basically, it took about 3 days to ferment. I racked it to secondary and let it, just the yeast settle out and, you know, sort of condition for about a day. I could have skipped that step if I wanted to, really. And then the next day I just racked it to a keg and sort of left it under, I just dialed it up to about maybe 30 psi of CO2 pressure. So instead of since I knew I had a couple days till I'd be serving it, rather than like shaking it and force carbonating it, the keg, I just, you know, let CO2 pressure do it. And I actually, like on day five, this was the day before I served it, sort of bled off some pressure and poured a little cup of it. It was actually ready by then. It was pretty decent. And on day six, I took it to the Austin Zealots, that's my homebrew club, Austin Zealots meeting. And, you know, everyone was sort of, including me, was very surprised that it tasted, you know, it tasted like a British bitter. It didn't, you know, there were no green notes in it. You know, I thought, when I brewed it, you know, I thought, well, this would be interesting. You know, I thought it would be drinkable by 6 days, but I thought it would be the kind of thing where you taste it and you go, oh, yeah, this is okay. You know, give it another week and it'll be fine. But at those low gravities, you know, the beer conditions very quickly. You know, and again, that when you look at how the British do it, that's for their cask beers, that's exactly how they do it. A cask beer that's being served, you know, hasn't been aged for any significant time. They brewed it, you know, early on in the week. And, you know, they clear it out by, they fine it with, I forget what they do. Is it Isinglass they use?
I don't know
my cask beer protocols, so I'm not even going to embarrass myself by saying it, but or guessing at it. But they, you know, they brew the beer, they fine it so it drops most of the yeast out, you know, and then they put it in these the kegs or the casks, and then you know they serve it hand pumped. So I mean, they don't even have to worry about carbonating it, you know, to any degree really, and yeah. So this is the beer I give isn't a real ale, and the descriptions aren't that for it. But it's for a British bitter, you know, a low gravity, pale ale sort of beer. Got a nice little hoppy bite to it. I used First Gold hops, which is a newer variety that I sort of like quite a bit, and tasted pretty good. I was surprised.
Well, I got to admit, at the beginning of the conversation, I was very very skeptical, but after hearing your personal experience, I'm convinced. And I like to do a lot of session beers, the low-gravity beers, because I can drink more of them.
Yeah, me too, exactly.
I can feel, you feel less guilty about drinking, you know, a few of them.
My keg of that, the Bonneville Bitter, just evaporated. I was like, you know, every night I was just, I can have another one of these. And yeah, I mean, it's good to be skeptical. I mean, my experience up to that point, you know, I'm an ordinary home brewer, and a lot of the things I brewed were sort of in higher gravity, and I didn't, you know, I would sometimes brew stuff in the lower 40s, but I think other than the dry stouts I've brewed, I haven't brewed a lot of beers, you know, down in the session beer, you know, the truly session beer levels. And so, you know, I was expecting it to be a little green, you know, a little rough around the edges at first, but it turned out fine. I was surprised.
Well, very
but then
nice.
Again, on the other hand, it made sense to me because, you know, British have been brewing, you know, session beers very quickly for, you know, centuries. And, you know, obviously if it took a couple more days to condition, they would take a couple more days to, you know, before they served it.
Well, very good. Very interesting. And I got the magazine in the mail, and I think I went through it almost immediately. It was a good edition.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good issue. I'm really excited about our next one too. It's gonna have some surprises.
Great. Well, we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you next issue.
Okay, James.
Well, thanks to Chris Colby of Brew Your Own Magazine once again for joining us. It's always fun to talk to Chris. And if you click on the BYO banner on our basicbrewing.com site, you can get a free issue of the magazine. And if you decide to subscribe after receiving your free issue, you'll be helping to support this podcast. Well, next week I hope to have an interview with Stan Hieronymus, author of Brew Like a Monk. We'll ask Stan to help us go into the summer brewing Trappist, Abbey, and Strong Belgian Ales. I'm really excited about that. If you have brewing questions in the meantime, show suggestions, or just want to say hey, write to james@basicbrewing.com. Or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And if you're on our site, you can check out our online shop, where you can find new pricing on our DVDs and a combo deal to save you even more. And you can throw a T-shirt in there, too, while you're at it. In Basic Brewing Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, we walk you through the extract brewing process step by step from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing, Stepping into All Grain, we take you through the all grain process from milling your grain to collecting your wort. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it online. And if your local homebrew store doesn't carry our DVDs, maybe you can suggest gently that they can contact me to find out how they can do that. Well, that's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time. So long.